Good day to you. This is Debbie Whitlock. Welcome to Femme Finance, setting the intention to create the prosperity and good fortune you deserve. Happy Friday, friends. I hope you're having a fantastic day. Here we are in the home stretch of the holidays.
That's a new one.
Exactly. I actually feel like I'm festivitizing now. I went to my first holiday gathering last night. Andrew Edwards and his team at Gear Live did their holiday bash downtown, and it was a riot.
Is that the one where Blitz made a cameo?
Blitz showed up.
New exactly. Blitz, by the way.
New Blitz, and New Blitz was a hoot.
How did he look?
He looks good.
Good.
All right. He looks really good. He's got a ton of charisma, a ton of personality.
Of course.
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. We had the fellow here, the rapper who did We Run This City, the Seahawks anthem, Velvet, that's his name.
Uh-huh.
He was there and he performed, and there was another guy that was there. These guys were insane. Hmm. Yeah, it was really fun. I took Jessica with me. She was pretty funny. She's like, how do you know who these people are? I said, I am just a dork that way. So, and I won some noise-canceling headphones.
You didn't.
I did. And so did Jessica. It was very exciting. Yeah, these guys were awesome. I'll give you both these guys.
All right.
Good men, good human beings. It was a lot of fun. So Andrew, team at Gear Live, you were amazing. Thanks again for hosting a really fun night. And there's a GeekWire gala in a couple weeks that I'll be at too.
So free headphones?
I know. I know. I'm pretty excited. Jessica and I are going to do some little walkabout with them on because she wants them too. And so we're going to, I mean, we are the whitest white girls that are out there.
But you're not going to white elephant that, are you?
No.
Okay, good answer.
No, because I am taking a trip over New Year's and I have a
you
feeling
probably need those.
Those little babies are going to come in quite handy.
Good idea.
Yeah,
good
quite
plan.
Handy. Good I love it. All right. Well, this is Femme Finance. We actually do talk about money, believe it or not. And today, you know, it's been a while since we've had this lovely lady on the program with us. Many of you in Seattle know her. And if you don't, you need to. The lovely and talented Seattle money coach, Michael Ann Volterra, has been a mentor to me for a number of years when I was a financial advisor. I remember when I sent just a blind email to you. I'd been stalking you online for a while and was like, hey, I really want to get to know you. It was my first attempt at networking, I think is what it was. And I was like, oh, gosh, will Michael Ann Volterra even answer? And I remember, I wish I could find the email because I was like doing a happy dance in my living room going, oh, my God, she answered. And I was like right around the holiday time, too, which was really interesting, you know, at the end of the year. And I think maybe I sort of sent the email out thinking, oh, you know, it's the holidays, so she's got some downtime and she's not going to reply. So this is a great time to send it because nobody answers. Great mindset I had going in there.
Yeah, that's a powerful mindset.
Very powerful. I love it. But Michael Ann Volterra, for those of you who don't know, is the co-founder of MoneyMinder Online. It's a web-based software designed to help people develop a healthy relationship to money, and who needs some more of that, and experience flexible, guilt-free spending. She's an amazing money coach, speaker, and author of Why Women Earn Less, How to Make What You're Really Worth. She addresses practical money matters as well as the emotional components, because there's a lot of stuff going on in your heads, ladies, that often fuel financial behaviors. Her passion is to help professional women escape the money fog, feel more in control of their finances, and love their financial life. So for the last 17 years, she's worked as a money coach with private individuals on their finances. So think of it in the context of if I'm working on the business side of things strategically, tactically inside your business, Michael Ann is doing that in your personal finances. So if you've ever wondered, you know, what's going on with my spending, my savings. Maybe you're going through a life transition, divorce, recently separated, lost your spouse or significant other due to death. These are the kinds of times and life events that probably is a really good time to reach out and talk to Michael Ann Volterra. So, Ms. Michael Ann, welcome back to Femme Finance.
Thank you so much to this lovely, gray, rainy Seattle day.
I know. Yeah, it's. It seems that our winter has now arrived.
It has, and I was commuting today from Seattle to this lovely East Side location.
Yes.
And blessings upon all the commuters out there. I generally don't commute, so it's good for me to have to commute occasionally and have great empathy for everyone.
Your traffic update brought to you by
Michael Ann Volterra.
Exactly. I was all traumatized. I'm like, wait. thousands of people do this every day. I can get across the bridge. Yes, I am one of those.
I know, but it's true. I mean, when you like live and work in a nice little radius, it sure does kind of throw you off your game, because then you're backing into, okay, so if I'm supposed to be here at 8:45, I need to leave by this, then I should plan in extra time.
And it's true. And I have a 5-minute commute from my neighborhood to where I work in Ballard. Sometimes I wish it was longer, you know, because when you drive home at the end of the day, you want to decompress.
Right.
You got to go home. You got to see the kid, cook dinner, all that stuff. Sometimes I'll circle the block just because it's like, you know, I need just a few more minutes before I head in there. So
I'm not ready to quite go in yet.
Right. I'm spoiled.
I love it. I work from home, so I also appreciate the commute, which is out the front door maybe to get the mail and then turn right back around and come in. So
nice.
It's good. It's good. So let's do this, Michael Ann. I want to set up our program today to really talk about how, you know, women can unlock their earning power. I want to get into some of the mindset, and I want to get into a lot of the strategy as well. But can you talk at a high level, just frame this out for the women who are listening today and for the men listening who have lovely ladies in their lives that you would like to support and make sure that they get a really good handle on finance and their financial situation? Set this up for us, Michael Ann, from a high level. So what's happening for women in terms of earning responsibility with the money? Like, where are we right now in contemporary culture as women with money?
Well, there's a small question to start. Yeah.
Well, you know, I said I'd ease into this.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So, boy, talk about a complicated subject. I mean, you know what's interesting about the whole earning discussion? Mm-hmm. A lot of people spend a lot of time talking about the spending side and the debt side and a lot of pain we have around, you know, debt and savings and spending, and I'm in a money fog and what's going on with my money. But this is the other side of the coin. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want to spend wisely and we want to earn what we're worth.
Yes.
And there's a big question, you know, are we earning what we're worth? And it's relative.
Right.
And what I find is, you know, I wrote a book years ago on, you know, why women are not earning at their potential. And it was interesting to me because people framed it as either a conservative or liberal answer. Mm. Some people said, well, women don't earn as much as men do because of the choices they make.
Right.
You know, we're staying home, we're out of the workforce more, we're dealing with our children, things like that. Other people say, oh, no, it's all because of the glass ceiling, you know, and gender discrimination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know, Deb, people want a simple answer.
Yep.
They wish there was a simple answer. And the reality is, I'm sorry, it's flipping complex, you know. And so I would say it's really personal, you know, for you, the person listening. Are you earning at your potential? Mm-hmm. And I think that the best way to frame it is just to define the term under earning, right?
Please do.
So let's just give a real simple definition. Under earning is the pattern of earning below your potential. Mm-hmm. Pattern of earning below your potential. And, you know, the most important word in there is pattern, because everybody's income goes down sometimes.
Sure.
You get hit with a bad boss. The economy happens. You lose clients. That doesn't make you an under-earner, but it's the pattern that we're looking at.
Right.
You know, have you consistently undersold yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're self-employed or salaried, male, female,
right.
You know, is this a pattern that you want to look at and heal? And that's what we want to dig into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it really interesting. I love the idea that it's a pattern, because I think if people really stop right there and take a look at, you know, where is it in fact a pattern? I know that, you know, clients will come to me and they'll have some questions about, you know, am I making what I can and on. And you really need to step in and take a look at what the pattern is, as you're saying, and then figure out a way to interrupt it.
Right.
I think interrupting the pattern, you know, becomes part of the strategy. Talk to us a little bit about the ways, the common ways that people, men or women, undersell themselves in the workplace.
Actually, that's a really great place for us to dig in right now, because one of the ways to stop the pattern is to name it.
Okay.
And actually look at, you know, what are examples in my life of where I've undersold myself. I think that probably the most common example for a lot of people is that we didn't negotiate our initial salary. We came into the market too low, and we're already working, and we don't ask for the raise.
Mm-hmm.
We just sort of wait and wait and wait to be given a raise. And if we do ask for a raise, we don't ask for enough money. Mm-hmm. You know, and for your listeners that are self-employed, it's similar. We go into the market too low, yep. and our fees are set too low to begin with. And you know this in your work with so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Our fees are too low to begin with. We wait too long to raise them. When we raise them, we don't raise them by enough.
Yes.
So those are all really common ways, but there's a lot of ways that people undersell themselves. Sometimes you find that people they're volunteering their time so much outside of work mm-hmm. that, you know, kid stuff or church stuff or whatever, they don't have the energy to yeah. put into their career. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that women more so than men will oftentimes stay in a dead-end job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are times that, honestly, you're not going to get promoted.
Right.
You don't have a great boss. You're not going to get the raise no matter how much you ask for it. It's not your imagination.
Right.
And so then the question is, why do you stay and stay and stay and stay for years and years and years and years and years? And mm-hmm. and it's a hard thing because a lot of underselling yourself is passive.
Yes.
It, you know, it's hard to see. It's mm-hmm. so much of it is about what we don't do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the career plan. We don't ask for the raise. Mm-hmm. We don't set our sights on how much money we actually need to make or want to make. So it can be hard to get your arms around from that mm-hmm. perspective.
Mm-hmm. But you have to start. I mean, and this is it. You're naming it. You need to sit down. And I think that the end of the year, quite frankly, for all of us, whether we're self-employed or we work inside a corporation, the end of the year is a beautiful time to be reflective,
mm-hmm.
To evaluate what did 2014 look like for you right. financially, right?
Right.
And going forward, what are the changes that you want to make? Michael Ann, let's do this. I want to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up that conversation. And then we're going to talk about some of the common traits that our under earners are sharing. This is Debbie Whitlock, and you're listening to Femme Finance.
Run this city.
Like what you hear? Then like Femme Finance on Facebook at facebook.com/FemmeFinance.
Welcome back. This is Debbie Whitlock, and you're listening to Femme Finance. Joining me today is the one and only Michael Ann Valterra, and we're talking about under-earning. And while a lot of, you know, our conversation will be directed to women, the reality is the pattern of under-earning exists for both men and women. And so
Absolutely.
We're talking about, like, the patterns and how to interrupt those patterns. And one of the things that Michael Ann was sharing before the break was, how do we interrupt it? And one of the first ways we do is by naming it. So oftentimes we just get stuck in this spinny place when it comes to money. And until we actually hit the pause button and start giving it some name, it really is not something that you can work with. What about this? We talked about the ways that people undersell themselves. I want to talk a little bit about some of the traits. I think this is a good time for people to listen in and go, is that me? So I kind of start self-selecting into how does this affect me in my life?
Right. Well, you know, under earners, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of traits and no one's going to identify with all of these, of course. And
right.
I don't think you'd want to. This is such a common issue, and so many of us have struggled at different points in our careers with underselling ourselves. But you find that people that really have this pattern of underselling themselves tend to oftentimes be fairly risk-averse
okay.
personalities.
Okay.
And, you know, I get that. I mean, Deb, I'm not a huge, huge risk taker, and I've had to really force myself to kind of step up, and mm-hmm. it's scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's very risky to raise your fees or ask for more money. So you do find that a lot of people that struggle with earning issues, they're risk adverse. Many are in a money fog.
Mm.
And, you know, we can talk about that more later. But bottom line is a lot of people don't know what they need to earn.
Right.
They're very foggy about money. I would say another common trait is they have a pretty conflicted relationship with money in general, right? It's like this love-hate affair. Oh my gosh, money would totally solve all my problems, but rich people are such
right.
fill in the blank, you
right.
know? And really, you really do find a lot of negative feelings towards people with money
yep.
and the wealthy in general, which I think would be an interesting thing for us to explore as well. So, you know, there's a lot going on. I will say that it's an interesting gender piece is that women more than men often feel that making more money is beyond their control. And it sounds odd to say it that way. In fact, I always think of dangerous liaisons when I think it's beyond my control.
Beyond.
But, you know, you find that it just doesn't occur to us.
Mm.
It just, we're not really out there thinking about this. It's like we're just sort of going along. We're working hard.
Mm-hmm.
And by God, working hard should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
We're good at what we do. But we're not running around thinking about it.
Right.
And when you ask women, well, how do you feel about the money you're making?
Mm.
It's interesting. A lot of women say, oh, yeah, pretty good. Yeah, I think I make pretty good money. And yet when you step back, we know that women are making 20 to 30% less than their male counterparts.
Right.
So there's this odd disconnect between how we feel personally and then when you step back going, you know, actually, we're probably not earning at our potential and we really need to name it and really push that edge of discomfort.
You know, I think it's interesting, this idea. Every time you keep talking about, we just sort of, you know, take what we can get when it comes to our earning. I keep thinking about, you know, of course, it was on the media here, what, 2 months ago, a month ago, the Microsoft CEO talking about,
right.
you know, women and karma.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, that statement, you know, definitely inflamed a lot of people. I do believe that there is a certain amount of, I don't think that women would say, I'm going to leave it up to karma.
Right.
But just what you said, which is we kind of just go along to get along.
Right.
And we kind of, you know, culturally, societally, you know, however it is that we've been raised as women, you know, a bit of where we are right now is that too many of us were not taught how to ask for what we want.
Right.
And what we really desire, not what we think we can get, which is how we negotiate.
Right.
We negotiate to the point of we're going to ask for what we're pretty sure they're going to give us, but we're not going to ask for what we really want. And you know that's happened to you because when you have negotiated something in your past, you float it out there and they immediately bite and go, okay, that sounds good. And you go, God, I should have.
What could I have gotten if? Yeah. Oh, no, it's so true. You know, and it is interesting, the stuff that came up at Microsoft. What I love about that is it brings up the issue.
Yes.
You know, and let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is controversial. I mean, we could go through this whole show and talk just about what it's like to be women in corporations.
Yes.
And some of the double standards and, you know, and there's some truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think it's important to not get bogged down in that is it's like saying, is there gender discrimination in the workplace? Yes, there
Shocker.
Is, you know, and what we want to look at is what's in our control.
Yes.
What can we do?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to earn at our potential and take care of ourselves as opposed to depressing ourselves about some things that are, you know, I hate to say that they're beyond our control because I do love to look at this and work at this at a societal level.
Right.
You know, I'm very rah-rah about the whole issue.
Right.
But, you know, for your individual listeners listening, what can they do,
right?
You know, to step into their own earning power and earn more so that they can have a more wonderful life? I mean,
right.
That's what this is about.
Right. So talk to us a little bit about the study about women underselling themselves more than men.
people that have heard me speak on the subject before have heard me talk about the study. It's called a pay equity study, and they do these types of studies over and over, and I'm always fascinated with it. The setup is this. It doesn't matter when they've done it, at what university, at what age level. They give the researchers, they give a little task, a little exercise to men and women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oftentimes we experiment on college students, you know, because they're so plentiful at colleges. We're always experimenting on them. So, you know, give them some random task. And they've done the study everything from go weed to go write an essay.
Mm-hmm.
And so these young men and women go off and they do their task and they come back and they're asked to do a self-evaluation.
Mm.
And they think, oh, that's what the study's about. Okay, you know. So they do their self-evaluation. And here's the good news. Men and women, we evaluate ourselves about equally.
Mm.
You know, women don't walk around thinking we're doing an inferior job. In fact, a lot of times, it's partly what makes us mad. We know we're doing a good job. We know it. And we look at some of the slackers and we're irritated, you know.
Totally.
But what the study was really about was after they evaluated, they divided them up and they had young men and women in one group and young men and women in another group. They couldn't hear each other.
Mm-hmm.
And to one group, they said, hey, this was great. We want to pay people to do what you just did on a much larger scale. What do you think we should pay them?
Mm.
What do you think we should pay other people to do a much, you know, bigger job of this? And the young men and women all said, oh, you know, about, you know, $80 for blah, blah, $80. And they said about the same number. Here's what's interesting. To this other group, they said, we want you to come back. What should we pay you to do this again. And I got to tell you, the young men said, oh, $80. And the women all came in 20 to 30% under and said, I'll do it for you for 60, you know. And I'm telling you, they do this study over and 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 over.
Right.
And women always pay everyone else more money than they pay themselves. So it's like it just makes us want to scream. And I think that that part of the takeaway, and this is going to sound really funny, Deb, but here's part of the takeaway to the women listening. Don't trust yourself, right? And what I mean by that is get outside help, perspectives, opinion, and support.
Right.
You know, if you're coming up in a situation where you need to say, this is how much money I want, you know, it's a contract, a negotiation, a salary, whatever, okay, do some research. Look at what other people have been paid. Ask opinions. Ask your mentor. Ask your friends. Ask your husband. Ask people, right? Because when we come up with a number in isolation, just out of our own minds, we will often come in too low. And so I think that the power of sharing this is, okay, I know that could be my tendency. I now know it. And now I'm going to fight it. And I'm going to get some wonderful help and support so that I can come up with a higher number.
Yeah. I wonder, so if this study, this is where my curiosity brain is going right now. So this study has been done over and over and over again with all these lovely college students for however many times and years that it's been done. And the result is consistent.
Yeah, it's usually about 20 to 25%.
So what, from your professional opinion, needs to start shifting in our culture, in our society? Is it conversations like this? Is it talking to, you know, amongst women and younger women? Is that where this begins to shift? Or what do you think?
Well, gosh, I hate
small question.
Yeah, it's a small question. And I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyways. They've taken the study all the way down to the level of first grade, and they have the same results where young girls pay themselves less than young boys do. I mean, they usually use like Hershey's Kisses or strawberries or things like that in place of money. But so it really begs the question of, you know, what's going on. And people take these all the way into looking at, you know, hormone levels to what's going on in early places in the home. You know, where I go with it is that the biggest difference between men and women, this is just in general, not about money,
right?
Just the biggest difference between men and women is women's drive for relationship, our drive to relate. This is awesome, right? This is why we're so happy. This is a thing that men love about women, you know. But the shadow side is that sometimes we are so afraid of doing something that will harm a relationship or make us look bad or ruffle a feather or potentially cause conflict that we protect relationships, even relationships with people we hardly know, right?
Yes.
It's like my barista. God forbid I say something that makes her not feel good, you know.
Right.
And we're not conscious of this. So I think that part of the answer is absolutely conversations like this. Making us aware of this almost impulse we have so that we can fight it. I think a huge piece of this is mentors and being surrounded by other women that support us and say, you know what? You should ask for more. You are worth more. That is so powerful. You know, I do. There is questions if it's changing generationally as young girls grow up with working career moms.
Right.
It's not changing as much as people think because so many professional women off ramp and are not working when their children are younger. Yeah. So I think it's this. It's this conversation and awareness and support.
And support, There is no reason that we need to be doing this alone. I think that's the big takeaway from this segment. Let's do this, Michael Ann. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation today with Michael Ann Valterra about under-earning. This is Debbie Whitlock, and you're listening to Femme Finance.
What happens between the shows? Find out at facebook.com/femfinance.
'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart.
Welcome back. This is Debbie Whitlock, and you're listening to Femme Finance. Joining us today is the one and only Michael Ann Volterra. For more information about her, please visit her website, seattlemoneycoach.com. There's some great resources on there, and in fact, we're going to talk either before the next break or coming back from the next break about a program that you may want to check out. Again, Michael Ann is one of the women who inspires me to do the work that I do with women and money, and you can apply what we're talking about today with many of the resources that she has on her website. So again, seattlemoneycoach.com. So let's talk about one of my favorite topics, noble poverty. I remember one of the first times I heard you speak, you mentioned this and my ears perked up and I thought, oh, that's kind of a interesting phrase. What is she talking about? Explain what noble poverty is. You touched on it a little bit, but I really want you to dive into it because there is something to be said in terms of a pattern that comes up for people and a story that's happening for them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You can almost sense the definition just from hearing noble poverty. I am so noble. Look at me. I don't have a lot, but I am so noble. Mm-hmm. It's the belief that there's virtue in not having money. Mm. And, you know, I think some of it boils down to a lot of us feel like, well, good people shouldn't want a lot of money or shouldn't need a lot of money. And, you know, if you're having a hard time going, I don't know about that definition, think about it this way. Do you ever feel greedy for wanting money or wanting to earn more money? And if you feel greedy for the desire to earn more, that's probably noble poverty, you know? And it comes from different places for different people. I've had a fair number of clients pick it up from different religious backgrounds.
Right.
I've had, and certainly not all religious backgrounds would give that, but, you know, some do. I know it's better. We all know some of the misquote about the love of money and all of that good stuff. but the other piece is that sometimes we just grow up hearing negative things about rich people.
Right.
You know, and sometimes it's sour grapes. We don't know as kids what's really going on for our parents. They're doing the best they can.
Yeah.
But we'll hear things, you know, we'll hear, oh my gosh, so-and-so, look at that, too big for his britches, and Mr., you know, rich smarty pants. And so we grow up with this feeling of, I can be good but poor, or rich and greedy, rich and evil, rich and bad, you know. And, you know, it sounds so odd and funny to us as adults, but as kids, it really is that simple.
Yep.
And these beliefs get laid down so long ago that here I am as an adult not thinking about this, going, okay, so good and poor or rich and evil. Mm-hmm. Well, what would you pick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if those are my options, hello, I'm a nice person.
Right.
I'm a really nice person. So I better make sure that I suppress my earnings. Mm-hmm. God forbid anybody think I'm greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes out in a lot of subtle and not so subtle ways. You know, for people that are self-employed, for example, it comes up when I work with clients, and I know you do this a lot with your clients. They feel really conflicted when they think about charging more, right? They feel, oh my gosh, what will my clients think? Will they think I just care about money more than them?
Right.
And that's some of that stuff that goes into that noble poverty.
Mm-hmm. How do you give us some language for people who are listening who are like, oh my gosh, you know, a good number of people who listen to this are self-employed. So can we speak for a moment to that audience and give them some maybe new framework, new language to start reprogramming this, what will they think of me if I charge more conversation that's going on in their head?
Well, a piece of it is a lot of us are over-identified with our business, right? And so it's all about what they will think of me. And I think part of it is, okay, I am me. I am not my business.
So
Michael Ann is not charging more money. Her business is charging more money. And just that differentiation, you know, my business costs have gone up. I need to keep pace with inflation. You know, the business needs to charge more money. It's not necessarily me charging more money. And we really do personalize this stuff far, far, far more than we need to, or really than we should, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we go back to like that relational thing that we were talking about earlier, we do need to attend to our earning issues to take care of our families,
yeah,
to take care of our children, you know. So there are times sometimes that what helps us is to go, okay, my business needs to charge more so that I can send my son to college.
Mm-hmm.
My business needs to charge more so that the woman that I'm going to be in 20 years, so that she has enough and she's not feeling deprived. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a lot of things that that can go into it. But I think that we oftentimes confuse all of this with anti-materialism.
Yes.
And, you know, hey, I agree. We use too many resources.
Yep.
Right? I mean, there is a finite